Science and Research of Cannabis Panel, The Compound, Medical Uses, History, New Studies and Ways of Use. Moderated by Kim Prince, CEO of Proven Media, joined by panelist Dr. Sue Sisley, MD of Scottsdale Research Institute, and Derek Espinoza, Director of Education for Baked Bros.
Derek is head of patient education, and one of the things that he said he wanted to talk about today and we think is very important is, first of all, and Sue's going to go into the vaping crisis a little bit, but I want to talk to Derek a little bit about dosing. I know you've got a pourable syrup that makes for very specific and accurate dosing. Do you want to talk a little bit about maybe your journey and kind of why you went with Baked Bros and why their product is so special?
All right. So when I first started finding cannabis, I didn't know anybody who consumed cannabis really. And so I got all my information off the internet, just like a lot of other people. And I had some really bad experiences with making my own edibles that, you know, I don't need to tell you, but if you've had that experience, it's terrifying. And I realized really quickly just from first person experience that dosing is absolutely critical because, you know, it's the difference between having a positive effect and having a super negative effect. And so being in the industry, I've been in the industry for 5 years, over and over patients come up to you as a cannabis educator and go, like, how do I figure out this dosing thing? Because I try one cookie or brownie and I'm shot off to the moon, and then I try another product and I don't get any effect at all. And when you look at the research, you find that it's not surprising that this is happening because there's a huge individual variance on everybody's tolerance to THC. So to put it in perspective for you, I know some people who their tolerance is like less than 2 milligrams and they start to feel uncomfortable. I've had other people who their first time trying cannabis, they needed as high as 50 milligrams of an edible in order to treat the pain that they were experiencing. So having a product, and ours is one of them, our syrups and our gummies that are able to dose and find that it's accurate is of huge benefit. And the other thing that I would talk about on that is that there's no required testing here in Arizona, and a lot of the other states out there, they have minimal to no testing standards also, and that's a huge problem. When you reach out to companies and you ask for test results and they provide test results that are 6 months old, I mean, that's really questionable. So finding a brand or a product that you can get those test results as they come, one of the things that we do and one of the reasons why I went with Baked Bros is because they're relentless about product testing. Every single batch that we produce comes with test results that you don't have to ask us for. You can go right on our website and you can find those test results. So any bag you have, you just type in the last 4 digits of your product ID and it'll pop up right there from the third party lab that we use, which is Delta Verde, the only accredited lab in Arizona. And one last thing on that is we've actually gone out and tested other products in the market, and some are as bad as being off by 120%+. I mean, one 10 milligram edible tested at 27 milligrams. And you imagine if you sent a loved one to a dispensary and that was the product that they got and their first experience was not a good one, well, now that person effectively is never going to use cannabis again, because why would you use something that, you know, caused you to have a really bad reaction?
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Related, I'm going to kind of tie this together with Sue's work with U.S. military veterans who are suffering from PTSD. When Baked Bros, when I first met them, one of the first things Nadeem did was deliver syrup to some military veterans who were really suffering and had found some relief with PTSD. Dr. Sue Sisley, who I'm so honored to have Dr. Sue. You may have seen her on, I don't want to embarrass you, but like, you name it, on national television, she's been on it. So related, she's done so much work for our military veterans. And what I like about Sue is I want to believe cannabis works and, you know, I'm passionate about it. But Sue's like, no, we're going to test it. Like, we're going to be scientific about this and approach it from that. So I have met military veterans who we believe, or they believe, cannabis has absolutely provided relief from their suffering. But Sue, can you tell us a little bit about your work with the U.S. military veterans and where you're at with that?
Right. Well, yeah, I think that's what the veterans were the ones who first taught me about how cannabis was helping them, and I was super skeptical at that time. It was like 15 years ago they started disclosing their use, and I was just really reluctant to embrace this idea that cannabis was medicine. So I, you know, we started applying to do controlled trials, and sadly I didn't get to mention this earlier, but the study that we did complete with the veterans was a negative study. And so that's where what propelled me to file the lawsuit against the government, because I feel so strongly that these the efficacy data was definitely sabotaged by this low quality plant material. It's like the old saying, garbage in, garbage out, you know, if you're forced to use this. So the stuff that the veterans are using in the real world is so dramatically different. And how do you explain, you know, these positive, you know, really transformative experiences from cannabis is probably because this is, that's not what we're studying in controlled trials. So I would say I still have hope that cannabis will be proven beneficial for PTSD in a controlled trial, but we haven't been able, until we end this monopoly, that's why it's so crucial that we all come together and put all of our energy toward pressuring the DEA to do the right thing, because otherwise every controlled trial will continue to do this. My only other way of doing this is to import cannabis from a Canadian LP to try to repeat this PTSD study. But I have to tell you, if any of you have looked at the Canadian cannabis flower, it's like maybe one step above the Mississippi. It's not impressive. So we're doing this more as a, you know, as an effort to end the monopoly by trying to bring in, you know, to import flower from a foreign country. But I think that the goal is really to get, you know, all these talented farmers here in the U.S., in Arizona, to be able to provide cannabis for clinical trials, and then we'll see a big difference.
So can you talk a little bit about the economics of the research that you're doing and why there's limited research? Are you getting any fun? Are you being supported with funding? Yeah. Or you want to kind of talk about some of those obstacles and barriers to research?
Yeah, that's, I don't know if you guys are aware, but, you know, our federal government doesn't fund studies looking at effectiveness of cannabis because it's Schedule I, as Derek said, where they've already told you this plant has no medical benefit. They feel it's a conflict for them to pay for studies looking at cannabis as a medicine. So we can only study it as a drug of abuse with using government money. So that's important to be aware. There is no government money to do drug development, to put flower through the FDA process, none of that. It's only to study harmful effects or addiction potential, and that's why you see such a paucity of trials helping, you know, like what we call strain science, where we could understand maybe which strains are best for which illnesses. No, the government is not going to fund any of those trials. They haven't ever. So that's why there's such limitations on what we know about, you know, what varieties are best to treat what which symptoms. So the way we funded our trials, because we're a 501c3, so we rely on private donors, which has been really challenging to find wealthy people who care about this work and want to open their wallets for this. We got a government grant from the state of Colorado. So that is one option, is we're trying to go through different state governments and persuade them to fund clinical trials. We managed to get, I don't know if you guys saw in Michigan, we wrote into the ballot initiative language $40 million to study veterans suicide using cannabis, you know, through FDA controlled trials. So that's a state that, you know, made a very generous contribution to veterans research. But it's really hard to do. I was hoping we would be able to access the surplus money from our medical marijuana program here in Arizona to fund trials, but I don't see that happening. You know, I don't know if there's any hope of doing that.
Wonderful. Thank you, Sue. Thank you so much. We're gonna kind of move over to that vaping situation. I want Sue to talk a little bit. She has a patient that she's treated who has asked her to share his story. Related, Derek, did you want to talk a little bit about how the pourable syrup could be an alternative to someone who doesn't want to smoke, but yet needs the benefits of a medication? And I think that's pretty unique to your company in terms of that highly dosed syrup. Do you want to talk about about that syrup and as an alternative to vaping?
Yeah.
Okay.
So consuming anything into your lungs is obviously not ideal. So, you know, edibles like we make, Bake Bros, are going to be more advantageous because you're not consuming these, you know, harmful products or smoke into your lungs. And the reason why our syrup is so unique is because you can dose it under your tongue sublingually, and the effects will kick in within about 15 to 20 minutes, which is a lot faster than a traditional edible. A traditional edible has to go through your stomach. It's bypassed by the liver and converted to 11-hydroxy-THC, and that process takes about an hour. So being able to have something that cuts that time significantly down, you also absorb a lot more medication by doing something sublingually. It just is a lot more effective for people, and you avoid the harms of smoking.
Yes, and I like to say I'm up in Carefree. There's a lot of old people up there. So I'm like, any person that's like 50 years old and older that knocks on my door, they're like, I want to talk to you about something. I'm like, oh, you want to know about marijuana? As I have tried, sometimes I just put two jars of it on my desk just to shock the mayor when he walks by. But with that said, there's definitely ways for your moms, for your grandmas, for your children who may be suffering from seizure disorder to medicate without using the smokable plant or smoking a joint, as we used to say. So with that said, vaping has become very popular. And Sue, do you want to go into kind of your experience and, you know, how you... maybe the three things that you can recommend to think about when vaping.
Yeah, maybe I'll have Carlos move the slides for us so we can. But yeah, this gentleman, it's a, you know, 23-year-old who is, you know, really vibrant athlete and just graduated from ASU, and he accessed a vape cartridge from the illicit market and ended up, I don't know if you can see the next slide, I'll show you. I was covering the ER that night, and he came in with this, the initial lung x-ray, and then you could see how it developed into, you know, this opacification throughout the lung. And the next slide you'll see, this is sort of a classic CT scan of these folks who, they develop these, what's called ground glass opacifications throughout the tissue. And it's, if you keep going, Carlos, you'll see there's some, there's some imaging. Keep going through this. You can see how all of these are pretty similar, these cases. All of these lung CTs look the same. The next one you'll see, this is the pathological slides where you can see this massive infusion of inflammatory cells into the, this is just a simple lung biopsy where you see all these macrophages coming in, trying to, trying to get rid of the inflammation. But here is, you see all the alveoli, you know, those little, the membranes around the alveoli are being destroyed by this chemical reaction, basically. And here you can see, the next one I'll show you. Yeah, so obviously what we're arguing, in addition to what Derek's saying about the oil, obviously the safest option, if you really want to inhale something, stick with natural flower, because then you don't have to worry about these potential contaminants. In this gentleman's case, his cartridge was full of mycobutanil. If you keep going, you'll see, let's see the next slide, Carlos. You'll see that mycobutanil actually turns into hydrogen cyanide with heating. So, keep going. Let's see if we can show that. So, basically, the CDC and other federal agencies have reported now that we think the main culprit in the vape crisis was this vitamin E acetate. So it's saying vitamin E is great for, you know, topical use, for ingestion, but to inhale an oil into your lungs can cause this lipoid pneumonia where you get, you know, it's just... oil and lung tissue don't go well together, and these guys end up with the. And you can see the whole point of what we can learn from this vape crisis is that regulated markets are best. If we can force the producers to actually make cartridges that don't contain these types of irritants. You can see in the other side, you'll see that there's like polyethylene glycol was a common cutting agent used in these cartridges, and this was really a bad choice because with heating, PG turns into formaldehyde, and that was also very problematic. So what we need is regulated markets where we can ban products like that, like vitamin E, PG, all these other, you know, things that are basically poisonous to lung tissue. And yeah, that's the main thing. And I think the other thing I want to mention too is that it's not just in the what's in the cartridge, but it's in the vape pen itself, in the hardware. We don't really know what metal fumes are coming out of the you know, so the hope down the road is that these vape devices will be tested for metal fumes from the electrical coils inside these pens, because this is just another totally unregulated area.